Hi, I'm Christine, an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 4th of 2000. I have a sponsor and a home group, and that means if I keep doing what I do, I have a pretty good chance of having 13 years in just a few weeks, which is really awesome. Whew. Excuse me, I'm really nervous. I'm shaking. I get really, really shy when it comes to being in front of people, and I don't really usually enjoy talking in front of people, but thank you so much for asking me. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't really get anything out of what I say tonight, know that I love Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. It has saved my life. It has changed my life, and it has really given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, sometimes, honestly, I've been having a really hard time for the past little while, but I am confident that if I keep coming to meetings, keep talking to my sponsor, keep helping people, and keep doing service, that it will turn around, life will get better again, and I will be okay. And I get to stay sober through the whole thing, so I do want to put that out there up front just in case it doesn't come out in this. I want to say I grew up in an alcoholic home. I share that mainly because I know that is some people's experience. It doesn't have to be yours. But for a long time, I blame my alcoholism on the fact that I grew up with an alcoholic father. And then I had my mom, who is my parents are lovely people. I grew up in a wonderful family. They're very loving. But there's also a lot of mental illness and there's just a lot of sick. And so it was kind of chaotic. They were very loving, but it was pretty chaotic. And I blamed my alcoholism on my father. And I drank because he did this, you know. And I came to learn as I've gotten sober, you know, that it's me. You know, it has nothing to do with my family. I don't know why I'm an alcoholic. I don't think that it matters why I'm an alcoholic. All that matters is that I do know today that I am an alcoholic, and that for me to drink is no good. And I'm so nervous. Like I said, I was always a weird kid. I was pretty uncomfortable in life, and for a long time I refused to drink. I wasn't going to drink because I didn't want to be like my dad. You know, I hated my father for a very long time. I didn't want to be like him. I didn't want to do what he did. So for a long time I swore up and down I was never going to drink. I didn't want to be like him. And then something changed when I was a teenager, and I had friends that were doing it, I guess, and it seemed like a good idea. And I started, outside substances are a part of my story. I want to say I'm grateful for that, because I think if I hadn't done any drugs, I think it would have taken me a lot longer to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm kind of grateful that I did that. So I started there, and then I started drinking. And actually, when I started drinking, I remember I felt powerful, because I instantly had a pretty high tolerance. I could drink, and I could drink a lot, and I intuitively knew that that was something to be proud of, you know. And I love drinking, you know, and I love that I had such a high tolerance, because I could drink with guys, and I could drink more than they could sometimes, and that was really cool. And I was, you know, as a teenager when I got sober, and I started drinking and started using other substances, and it was pretty instantaneous. I love how it talks in the book about how women alcoholics go beyond recall in a few years, because I really feel I went downhill very quickly. My whole drinking career lasted about 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. It was not very long. It was not very exciting or glamorous, but it brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous pretty quickly, and I'm pretty grateful for that. But I started drinking. It did something for me. If you guys are here, you know what I'm talking about. It made me feel like I was okay. It made me feel like I could breathe. It made me feel like I could interact with the rest of the world. And it really, it was my solution. It was totally a solution for me. It was a solution for life. And I got here, you know, I was hanging out with friends, and I very quickly sought out lower friends and companions, because I started in high school. I started hanging out with the really good kids. I was in theater in high school. I loved being in plays. I loved acting. I loved being on stage. I actually had the chance 1 year. I was going to be the assistant director for the school play, which I was the first student assistant director that they were going to have, and it was kind of a pretty cool opportunity, and I'd been really excited. But one day after school, I got the opportunity to go drink with some friends right after school, and I was supposed to be at play practice, but these people were going to go drink. And so I went, and I drank, and I got high, and then I came back to school, and I could hardly move. You know, I wasn't in any state to do anything, and I had done this about 3 or 4 times in that week, and my best friend was just really concerned about me, because I had only started drinking and smoking about a month before that. And she's like, "What's going on with you?" And she went, my mom worked at my high school, and she told my mom, "I think your daughter has a problem." And my mom came and talked to me. I ended up getting kicked out of the play. Fortunately, my mom worked there because that could have gotten me expelled from school. So I had this whole thing. I'm like, okay, fine. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do drugs. I'm just going to be clean. And that lasted for about 2 months. And then the guy that I was involved with, I called him my boyfriend for a long time in sobriety, but he was never my boyfriend because he had a girlfriend, and it wasn't me. Your honesty. He told me that he didn't want to see me anymore, and that was devastating because he was the love of my life, and at 16, you know how those go. And I was devastated, and, it wasn't long after that that I started drinking again. And it was really just, I couldn't drink every day. I couldn't get high every day. I couldn't do anything every day. But I did it as often as I could. And it really, my life started to revolve around it because it was really the only thing that made me feel okay in my skin. At that age, I'm like, I couldn't stand being sober. I could not stand being sober. It felt like I wanted to crawl out of my skin. And my head was just going and it was talking so much. And it was just, there was always thoughts and it was just, sober was unbearable, and I didn't understand why you would want to do anything sober when you could do things high. I didn't understand why you'd want to not drink when you could drink. You know, it didn't make sense to me. And then also that year, I had two friends in high school that they were killed in a car accident, and drinking was involved in that. And for me, part of my, like, that was a great excuse to drink. That was a great reason to get high. That was a great reason. You know, I have something to drink at now, and don't you understand? I just had these people. Well, I was not really close to them. They were in my grade. I knew them, but that was really the extent of it. But I totally use this as a thing because that's why I was always looking for things. I was always looking for reasons to explain why I drank the way that I did to other people because they just didn't seem to understand. My friends just were not on the same level with me. They're like, why don't you try and maybe slow down? And I'm like, they weren't my friend anymore after that because that was, you don't do that to people, you know. And I had one friend who, he suggested, he's like, yeah, why don't you try and maybe stop for like 2 or 3 months? And our friendship was really never the same after that because I was really offended, I was really insulted, and I was really horrified that someone would suggest such a thing because he wanted to take away the only thing that ever helped me and the only thing that made me feel like I was okay in my skin. And we weren't friends. And so it continued on like that for the rest of the summer. And I went to a concert with a friend, and we were supposed to go back to her house afterwards, and the whole time I made a fool of myself. I tried to go back to a hotel room with some drummer. I'm 16 years old at this point, and she's just disgusted with me because this is just kind of one more time Christy's acting the fool, you know, because she's drinking and trying to have fun. And she told me she was done with me. She was the last person that would really hang out with me and drink, and she's like, Christy, I can't do this anymore. She's like, this is a constant with you, and until you can get yourself together, we're not. I can't be with this friend. And I'm going to tell your parents. And that's where she got me, because I'm like, ugh. And I was pretty proactive. I was pretty smart. I knew that if I went to my parents first, that would lessen the trouble that I was in. So I went to my parents, and I said, hey, Mom and Dad, I'm like, just so you guys know, I've been drinking, and I think I might have a problem. And so they put me in an outpatient rehab. And I really didn't think I had a problem other than people not leaving me alone and letting me do what I wanted. And I get to outpatient rehab, and I'm there for 3 weeks. I'm getting urine testing. And after 3 weeks, it was so unbearable to be in my skin sober that I started drinking and I started smoking pot around the piss test, you know, in hopes that somehow I wouldn't get caught. And then they did a surprise urinalysis screen that I wasn't expecting, and so I knew I was busted again. I went to my parents, and I'm like, I need something more intensive. And meanwhile, one of my best friends found a rehab for my parents to send me to and told them about it, and they sent me there. And I was in this rehab for 17 days. The day that I got out, November 4th of 2000, is my sobriety date. The day I got out is my sobriety date because while I was in there, I was so desperate to change the way that I felt on the inside that I started mistaking the sleeping pills that they gave me and other medication that they gave me. I'd cheek it, and I'd try and take it all at once and try and stay awake and just do something because it was so unbearable to be sober. And I was very fortunate. My mom, like I mentioned before, worked for the school system, and she had a couple of people that she pulled some strings, and she was able to get me into, up in Montgomery County, Maryland, there's a program called Phoenix, and it's a high school program for recovering addicts and alcoholics. And I'm really, really grateful for that today because that was where I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to the school, and they had classes like, how do you feel today? And I hated that. I'm like, I'm a very emotional person. That's something that I've actually always hated about myself. I hate feelings. Unless it's good, I like feeling good or numb. But that was really be as far as I wanted my emotional scale to go, good or numb, and that's really it. And but when I was there, they started taking us to meetings and started having us go. And I had to get 4 slips signed a week, and I luckily ended up in a very strong group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a sponsor the first night. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what a sponsor did. I didn't really want one. This woman just came up to me. She said she would be my sponsor, and she told me to call her every day. I didn't know who she thought she was. I didn't call anybody every day. And I was kind of offended by that, and I said, I only need to go to 4 meetings a week. That's all they say. And she said, no, we go to 7. And I was not really interested in that, but whatever. People were coming and picking me up, and it was really nice, you know, because people came and picked me up, and I was going out of my skin. I'm sober. I don't want to be sober. I just want people to leave me alone so I can go back to doing what I want to do and go back to drinking and have my life be the way that I want it to be. And but I'm coming to these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people are picking me up, and I remember there's one woman. She came and picked me up. We went to a meeting, and then she took me home, and she said, I had a really good time with you. It was really fun. We should do this again. And I said, you want to hang out with me again? And it was really cool. It stuck in my mind because that was the first time in a really long time that someone told me they wanted to hang out with me again. Because I was really good at pushing people away. I was really good. First off, I didn't like getting close to people. I didn't like being vulnerable. I didn't want you to know that I was hurting. I just, you know, I was so scared. I was so terrified. I really hated everyone looked so happy and shiny and pretty. And I hated them for it. You know, I got to AA, and I'm like, I was really, like, I felt like I was dying on the inside. I really hated being sober. I really hated this whole idea of the way of life. When I got sober, if you had more than, like, 9 months, I didn't really believe you. I felt like, okay, either you don't have the same thing that I have, or you're not really sober that long, because it was really unbearable for me. I still really didn't think that I was an alcoholic. I still really didn't think that I had this thing. I just knew that I felt better when I was high or when I was drunk. You know, I knew that I didn't have to feel anything. I liked being numb. I liked being able to take that breath. I liked that escape from life. I don't like reality. I don't like it at all. And alcohol took that away from me. And so I start coming to meetings. I start getting friends in the fellowship. You know, I start coming out, and I actually ended up getting a different sponsor at about 3 months sobriety. And this was a woman. I liked her because she let me cry in the backseat of her car about things that happened when I was 4 years old. And she didn't tell me I was wrong. She didn't tell me that I was being a big baby. She didn't try and one-up me. She didn't tell me anything. She just kind of let me cry. And she made herself safe for me. And this one is actually my sponsor today. And I'm ever grateful for her because that made Alcoholics Anonymous safe for me, you know. And I was someone, you know, 16 years old. I was doing crazy things. And I'm like, I was just talking to them in the car. I'm like, I was a kid. I was a child. I'm like, it's so crazy to me now because I look at younger people. I'm like, they're children. And I don't know, but I'm so grateful that I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous when I did, because I see, you know, I actually came in with a cohort of other people my age, and some of them stayed sober, some of them did not, and I see some of the ones that did not, you know, and I see the way that this thing progresses, you know, and I'm really grateful. They talked a lot when I was new about catching alcoholism in AA, and I really feel like that's what happened to me. I read the doctor's opinion, and it talked about the physical craving, you know, the phenomenon of craving, you know, and that was the first time that I'd ever understood that, because it would baffle me, because me and my friends would go and we would drink, and they would get to a point where they were like, I'd have nothing, you know, I don't want to do anymore, I have stuff to do tomorrow, and that just always seemed so weird to me, like, and they'd have a drink, and if there were, like, 3 beers there, I wouldn't bother, because it wouldn't be enough, and I knew I would just go crazy. I needed more than that, you know, I needed something that was actually going to change the way that I felt, and there was no off button. There was the on switch, and that was it. You know, once I start drinking, that's all I want to keep doing. And that was the first time that I ever heard it talked about. And then I came to meetings, and people, you know, they talked about the language of the heart, and they talked about the way that they felt, and they talked about that screw that's inside that gets really tight, and then when you drink, it kind of gets released a little bit. And I got here, and I related to the feelings. I didn't relate to the outsides. You know, I was not nearly as much. But I related after a while. Once I started to listen, I related to what people talked about. And it was also really nice to all of a sudden have some friends because people would come and pick me up. But then by the end of that first year, I was getting ready to graduate. I was no longer going to be required to go to meetings and get slip signed. So I really felt like, okay, thank you guys. I learned a lot, and I'm going to go do my thing now. And I stopped going to meetings for a couple of weeks. I stopped talking to a sponsor because I felt like also she wanted to control my life. And I was pretty angry. And, like, I didn't really need someone to run my life. I was just fine, thank you. And unfortunately, I'd gotten a job with someone in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this person brought other people in AA in to come say hi to me. And I was like, oh, you guys really are a cult. You're chasing me now. And it was really uncomfortable. But then, so I found out from one of those people that my sponsor's boyfriend had broken up with her. And I felt really bad for her, and I realized she probably needed my help. And I ended up getting in touch with her again. And I called her to see if she was doing all right. And we talked for a little while, and she convinced me to go to a meeting, and she agreed to pick me up. And that night she came, and she picked me up. And on the way back, I get a phone call. My grandfather had a stroke, and he ended up dying 4 days later. And that was really weird. I started, you know, I was with her, and I came to the meeting, and people were happy to see me. People were happy to see that I was doing okay. And I made sure everyone knew that I hadn't drank in the time that I was gone, because that was very important to me, that I still had the same date. And honestly, I feel like that kept me sober for a little while, the fact that there were people that I didn't like who had less time than me, and I didn't want them to have more time than me. That really kept me sober, I think, for a while in my first year. You know, I am very ego-driven sometimes. But anyways, I started coming back to meetings, and that was after my grandfather died, and I was able to stay sober through it, and that was kind of a pretty big deal for me, because, like I said before, anytime someone dies, great reason to drink, great excuse to drink, and I'm really grateful. Like I said, I had this active home group, and I had done a fourth step, and a fourth and fifth step, and so I did trust that this woman knew a lot of things about me, it's been crazy. You know, I started coming back to meetings, and I haven't looked back since. I've been in active AA membership since that day, you know, and I've come to a lot of meetings, and it's been really great, you know, for years and years. You know, it's I don't know, I'm a very bold proportion. The third step, you know, the page 37, the 12 and 12, it talks about, as far as alcohol is concerned, we'll give that over, but as far as everything else, it's ours and ours alone, and it's our decision to make, and I'm very much a page 37 girl. You know, for a long time, I really have gotten myself into a lot of scrapes. You know, for a long time, it was ready, fire, aim, you know, and I would bring all sorts of damage control to my sponsor. I'm like, oh my God, I just did this. How do I clean it up? You know, and it took me a really long time in AA to learn how to use a sponsor and learn how to allow myself to be guided in Alcoholics Anonymous and learn to take suggestions from people who have been there, you know, because really, I often don't trust experience until it's my own. You know, you guys can tell me whatever you want to tell me until you're blue in the face, but I usually need to kind of figure things out for myself, and I've always kind of been that way, and sometimes that's been to my detriment. The longer I stay sober, the more I am able to trust in other people's experience. Sometimes, you know, it talks about being able to grow through joy and pain. I still think I need pain probably about 85-90% of the time in order for me to change, if we're going to be honest about it. But I think that's okay. You know, I've never been told I wasn't allowed to be here, and I'm grateful for that. So when I had about 18 months, I got into an argument with my sponsor because she thought it would be a good idea if I did something, and again, I didn't want her telling me what to do, so I got a different sponsor, and then a year and a half later, she was tired of me, and she told me, I don't think I can help you anymore. You might need to find another sponsor. And I ended up getting the sponsor that I had previously, Megan. I asked her to be my temporary sponsor, and so for the past, 10 years now, she's been my temporary sponsor. But I've been really grateful for that, you know, because I'm someone, Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing for the way that it can make relationships better again, you know, and really heal relationships and really give me an opportunity to get to know people and trust them and really, the relationships, I guess, are just such a wonderful gift of this program, and it was something that I didn't expect or want. You know, I didn't really want to be here. I wanted you guys to teach me how to get out of trouble. I wanted you to tell me that everything was going to be okay and I could go back to doing what I was doing. And it's been so much greater than all of that. I think I did my first, fourth, and fifth step. I don't know. First off, I thought I was going to skip the third step when I did my fourth and fifth step because I had been really angry. I had written out a first step, and then two and three. I didn't really like the whole God idea when I first got here. I wasn't really interested in that. And I was going really crazy on that, and my sponsor was like, I think it's time for you to start working on a four step. And I was like, oh, great, I get to skip two and three. You know, that's really, so I thought I was kind of getting over, and later on I learned I wasn't. But I did a fourth and fifth step, and for the fourth step, I started writing it down, and I wrote a little bit, and then I realized, oh, fifth step means I actually have to share this with someone and tell them this. And, you know, there was nothing like super horrible on there, but there was still a lot of stuff that I was not really interested in talking to anybody about. And so I sat on it for a while, and then my sponsor ended up locking me in her bedroom and making me finish it, and then we did the fifth step. And we did it in a Denny's, and I just remember, because there are people in the table next to us, they're saying things like character defects and God's will, and I think it was another group of friends of Bill, and it was really cool. That was kind of a little God moment for me, and it was pretty neat. And I'm pretty slow when it comes to getting stuff. And for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was really pushing my sponsor, let me start making amends, let me do my ASIT, let me start doing this. But I hadn't really changed. I hadn't really done anything different. I was still the same person, but I was just not drinking anymore. And I was really angry with her, because for me, a long time, it was this race. I'm like, no, all these other people are doing their eighth and ninth steps, and I want to start doing mine, too. And I didn't do my eighth step until I had 5.5 years sober. And for a long time, I was angry about that. By that time, when I finally did it, I was really grateful that my sponsor had me hold off, because by the time that I did it, I was really a lot more able and willing to be honest on there and see where I'd really made these harms and really done these wrongs. And that ended up being such a powerful experience during my eighth and ninth steps. And honestly, with my eighth step, it was really funny to me, because the longer I stay sober, it feels like the broader my vision gets, the more that I'm actually able to see, the deeper I'm able to get into my inventory, and the more I can get down to the causes and conditions of why I drank. And there was a time, like about 2 years ago, that I realized a new name that I had never thought about. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe when I went skinny dipping with that girl's boyfriend, that was a harm. You know, just stuff like that. It was just silly things like that. But I'm like, all these things that I would just do, and someone once described me, like much like the whirling dervish, you know, someone described me as like a Tasmanian devil. I was just kind of blowing through everywhere, just really not even paying attention to the wreckage that I left in my wake. I didn't really know. I didn't care. And being in Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me be a little bit more able to be aware of the things that I'm doing today. And that, for me, is a huge freedom. You know, the whole fourth and fifth step, when I got here, I thought I was a victim of life. You know, I had this kind of chaotic childhood. I had some outside issues. You know, it was kind of rough sometimes, and I really felt like I was a victim of life. And if you had been through what I'd been through, you'd drink too. You know, I was really jaded for a teen. You know, I was really good at that. I had a lot of angst and a lot of self-pity. And when I got here and I did that fourth and fifth step, it was the first time that I was able to take responsibility for my life in any way, shape, or form. And that has given me an incredible amount of freedom, you know, and being able to look at myself and see my part and see where I'm to blame for all these things in my life, see where I've stepped on the toes of my fellows and they've retaliated, has really been the most eye-opening and wonderful tool that I've gotten out of this program. It allows me to live and get along with people better than I think I can manage on my own. When I did the eighth and ninth step, one of the biggest amends that I made was to my older sister, who her and I had been like really, really close when we were kids. She was a year and a half older than me. And we had been really close. We really hung out together a lot. And then I started drinking. I tried to get her to drink with me, and she wasn't interested. And so she's not really fun to be around anymore. And I did a lot of damage in that relationship. There was some time she got a hotel room for a conference that we were going to. She paid for it herself, and I let someone stay in exchange for drugs. And it was someone she hated, but I didn't care. You know, I just didn't care. I just wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And you see, you need to understand that I want this because I want it. Like, it doesn't matter how it affects you, but I want it. And I just, my self-centeredness. And I made amends with my sister. I took her out to eat at a restaurant. We talked, and it was really awesome. And I paid her back the money for that room. And for that day, you know, our relationship has really changed. And that was, that I think was the amends that really affected me the most, because I was really able to see the difference in our relationship afterwards. You know, I was very fortunate in getting sober young, you know, because I think it stopped a lot of the damage before I really had a chance to do too much. I did mainly the harm to the people closest to me, my parents, my family. You know, I caused them a lot of worry, stole their peace of mind. And, but with my sister, you know, it was really cool. It was one of those amends where I could really see the change in how we had gotten better. My relationship with her still wasn't perfect, but I bring that up because about 2 years ago, I was actually with Ashley. We were on our way to a meeting, and I got a phone call from my father, and he said my sister hadn't come home from work that day. No one had heard from her. She didn't show up for work, and her husband couldn't get in touch with her, and they didn't know where she was. Her car was missing, and she wasn't answering her cell phone, and it was a little weird, and I was a little worried, but I didn't really think too much of it. We went to a meeting, I shared about it, and it was all right, and the next day, she still hadn't come home, and then the day after that, she still, you know, and we made missing posters, and I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was really awful, you know. Molly helped me make a bunch of flyers. She lived in Frederick, Maryland, and we drove up and we were posting flyers, and I had a lot of people in AA, and it was just terrifying, you know. No one knew where she was. We couldn't get a hold of her. And it was a whole weekend, and 6 days later, I'm at work, and I get a phone call, and they found my sister. I don't know if my sister was an alcoholic. I don't know if she just had some mental illness, but my sister had taken her own life, and she was found in a Walmart parking lot. And she had left a note, you know, saying that she didn't want to be alive anymore, and she just couldn't do it anymore. And I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. This is my childhood best friend. And I called some people. You know, I was at work. I actually worked. I was really lucky. There were two people in Alcoholics Anonymous who worked in my building. And I emailed one, and the other one met up for me. We went outside, and we talked for a few minutes. And then I went, and I drove to my sister's house. My parents were there, and they're like, why don't you go to a meeting? And after, like, we met with the police, and we heard about the note and her husband and everything. And I was like, no, I want to be here with you guys. And they're like, no, why don't you go to a meeting? You know, and that was so cool, you know, because when I first got sober, my parents weren't really sure about this whole AA thing. They didn't know. Like, I was home less after I started going to AA than I had been beforehand, you know, and they're like, what's this about? And they're like, you listen to your sponsor and you won't listen to us. So they're like, what's that about too? But over the years that I'd been coming here, they'd seen a change in me. They'd seen the way that this has worked in my life. And they knew that I needed to be with you guys. And so I was at a meeting that night, and then people organized. They brought food to my house. They brought me dinner every night for a week. They brought dinner to my parents every night for a week. They offered to bring dinner to my brother-in-law every night for a week. You know, he didn't take them up on it, but and when I needed you guys, y'all were there, and I was really, like I said, something like this. I don't like feeling emotions. I don't know what to do with that. I can be angry really easily. I like being angry. I feel powerful with angry, but this sort of devastation, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know how to be sober through this, and I'm really grateful. There was actually a man in my home group who had been through a similar experience. His sister had been missing for 6 days and then was also found out of a suicide. And for a long time, you know, one of my things was I'm different, you know, I'm too young, I'm too this, I'm too that. You know, I had all these reasons why I was different from you. And thank God for him, because, you know, I could not be different, because he had the exact same situation. And for a long time, he was the first person that I would really talk to, because I didn't really trust any other people. Like, I know you'd been through stuff, but no one had been through stuff like this, it didn't seem. You know, it felt very different to me. And as I was able to stay through it longer, you know, I was able to see, you know, life happens. People go through tragedies, and people are able to stay sober through that. And I was able to kind of broaden my mind a little bit and open up a little bit more and trust that I can stay sober through this too. You know, and I talked to a lot of people who had been through a lot of different things. And you know, I saw my case wasn't different still. You know, I was no... I'm still alcoholic. I still need to do this stuff. And yeah, there were days it was really hard to get out of bed, and it was really hard to keep moving. And I'm really grateful for an active home group and a lot of people that were calling me, and a lot of people who held me really accountable, because I really needed that, you know. And I'm really glad that I was trained to get up and go to a meeting. And I don't know how helpful I was to the girls that I sponsored, but I was really grateful for them, you know, because they really cared me a lot. And they kept me going, and it has been, you know, that was 2 years ago in July, and it has been, you know, I just felt like it's been one thing after another for the past 2 years, you know, with my sister, and then right after my sister died, my mom was, her car was told in the car accident, like 2 months later, my father's car was told in the car accident. It was just not their fault, both were other people's fault, you know. My brother got skin cancer. It was just, I'm like, you got to be kidding me then. Last October, my grandmother and my mom's side died. This past June, my dad's mother had a bout with cancer, and she died. And then my mom, like I said, she's mentally ill, and she's been in and out of the hospital several times over the past 2 years. And it's been really cool, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to come lean on you guys, and the parents have been able to lean on me a little bit, and I've been able to show up there in a way that I never thought that I was going to want to. I just say my relationship with my family is not perfect. You know, there's a lot going on there. And some days it's to the point where I'm better off if I stay away, you know, but I'm really grateful that I have another family in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can come to and come here, and I do want to talk a little bit, you know. I got here, and I did not like the whole God idea. I didn't like this idea of some, I felt like you're telling me that I'm a pawn on a chessboard, and I should give my life over to this thing to do with what he wants, and I'm like, that's ridiculous. I don't want, you know, it's my life. I want to do with what I want, and slowly over time, I grew to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then my faith broadened and deepened, and I began to feel comfortable with a higher power, and I know back actually in 2009, that was the first time that I really felt like I had faith, because it was just my mom had a medical emergency and ended up in the emergency room, and she was screaming she was going to die, and I really thought she was. But I remember feeling like I'm going to be able to be okay through that. And I got through a breakup, you know, which up to that point had been one of the most significant losses of my life. And I felt like I was okay and I was fine and I'd be able to get sober through it. And actually, immediately after my sister's death, you know, I felt very close to God and I felt very taken care of, you know, as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I do say also I have experienced an awful lot of anger. Again, like I said, anger is a lot more comfortable for me than sad. And I've definitely been there, and I've had moments where I've, like, been so angry at whatever God there is, you know, that this could happen, that would allow this to happen, you know, and I'd come to meetings and people would talk about their own brushes with suicide and how someone would come in at the last minute and save them, and I'd always be so angry because, you know, that wasn't my sister's story. And there were days at meetings I'd have to get up and I'd have to walk out, you know, because someone would talk about that and someone would make a joke, and I'd get so angry. There were a couple times I'd get up and I'd go home and I'd just cry. And it has been, I don't know, it's been really hard. You know, I started having a lot of panic attacks, and I had a lot of emotional problems after this, and I've been really frustrated and really angry because I'm like, I want to make myself better, you know, and one thing, you know, drinking, you know, used to make stuff better right away, and that's one thing my sponsor keeps reminding me, that this is not a quick solution, you know, this is something that works over the long term. You know, if you keep coming here and keep doing this, you'll feel better. And some days it doesn't happen nearly quick enough for me. I want to be better tomorrow, or today preferably, but tomorrow I'll do, but it never seems to work quick enough for me. And that idea, we got to be content with patient progress, like in every area of our life. I'm like, oh, you know, I don't like it. I want to be better now. I want to feel better now. It's more I want to feel better now. And something I do have to say, like, I feel like almost as a result of this, I've been so uncomfortable. You know, there's been so much going on. Also, there's just so much life stuff that I'm like, I don't want, you know. And you guys have taught me, you know, life on life's terms. And that's what we're about here, you know. And you taught me we can stay separate through anything. And I do believe that today, you know. And just like 3 months ago, didn't know this was going to come out, but here it is, you know, 3 months ago. I'd been in a relationship. I thought we were going to get married. And you tell me you felt like you was forcing it and it wasn't going to work, you know. And I'm like, really? You know, and honestly, the past 3 months, I've really kind of been struggling with the idea of God and with faith. And it's really, I'm having a spiritual temper tantrum more than anything else, you know, because I'm really tired of not getting what I want. You know, I felt like for a while, like I had a very blessed sobriety. I was very lucky. You know, I had nothing coming at me. But I'm so grateful that I was able to build a foundation here. And I was able to learn how to put one foot in front of the other and keep on trucking and keep on coming and stay in the course, you know, and doing the steps. And I'm also, my sponsor is constantly telling me, keep putting love out there. You know, the idea that we have the 11th step, you know, in the St. Francis prayer, you know, keep giving out love because you will feel it again someday and you will have it, you know, not just from just any love, you know. And it's true, you know, it's so crazy to me how it's been, and I have almost 13 years sober now, and this has really felt almost like I'm getting sober again. You know, it's that up and down roller coaster of the first few years. You know, and it was so easy to forget, you know, because my life has gotten so good here, and things have just, you know, for a long time, it's gotten so easy. And even yesterday, I was on the phone with my sponsor, and I was crying. I'm like, what do I have that's good in my life? And she's like, oh, are you kidding me? She's like, are you kidding me? Why don't you go home and do a gratitude list? You know, and actually, I started writing, and I had to stop because I didn't have enough time to keep going, you know, because I have a blessed life. You know, I really have so much. I have so many relationships with so many wonderful people, and I get to do so much stuff. You know, I was actually furloughed. I was a government contractor, you know, with this whole recent thing, and I'm not getting back pay because I'm a contractor, and I'm not happy about that. But because I've been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous a long time, you know, fear of financial insecurity doesn't plague me. Actually, I'm so afraid of financial insecurity that I've been, you know, I'm financially responsible today, you know, and I'm able to take care of myself, and I'm an independent woman, you know, and I can go to work, and I can show up, and I've had the same job for 11 years. I graduated from a community college a few months ago, back in June, and I'm doing work to go into nursing school, hopefully next year, you know, I live with other sober women. You know, I have a car. I have a roof over my head. You know, I have wonderful friends who are willing to drive a couple hours down with me. And I know it's so crazy to me. Like, I'm still, I always have to remind, you know, I'm so grateful for reminders of things to be grateful for, because by myself, I'm kind of on a default negative setting. And when I come to AA, you know, I usually get those reminders that I have so much to be grateful for, and I have so much in my life, and that is all a gift. You know, and things can really change at any moment, you know, but I do trust that if I keep coming here, I'm going to keep getting better, because that has been my experience. I'm, you know, someone I like myself most of the time today, and I could not say that when I got here. I didn't, you know, my sponsor's big on the idea, you build self-esteem by taking esteemable actions, you know, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, how to take esteemable actions regardless of how I feel, you know, because while I hate having feelings, I place a lot of value on them, and it's like, if I don't feel like doing something, I don't want to do it. You know, they've taught me to take the action anyway and show up regardless of how I feel. And if I keep doing that, I think I'm in good hands. So, that's 20 minutes early, but I think that's tapped out. Thank you all very much for having me.